But tonight, I'm very happy to welcome back to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Michael Rinaldini. Michael is the director of the Qigong and Taoist Training Center and founder of the American Dragon Gate Lineage. He is a National Qigong Association Level 4 certified Qigong teacher and 22nd generation Longmen Taoist priest. He was ordained in China in 2003. And he lives right here in Sebastopol. I have a lot of experience with Buddhism, and please have a seat. Buddhism has a long history of going from country to country to country. And American Buddhists are very conscious. They'll talk with each other about how Buddhism was transmitted from India to Tibet, or India to Burma, or India to Sri Lanka. And they draw on that in transmitting Buddhism to the West. Taoism has been almost, for its entire history, a Chinese spiritual practice. So it's much more difficult to find a Taoist priest in America than it is to find a Buddhist practitioner. And I think we're extremely fortunate here in Sebastopol to have Michael, who has taken the time to go to China and learn the practice and bring them back to us. And tonight he will be talking about the book he's written, A Taoist Practice Journal, Come Laugh With Me. Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
So, I've talked several times here and other places, but this is the first time I'm talking, or actually going to be reading, from a book that's been in the making for a really long time. Like, even before I knew I was working on writing a book. If you read the book or the introduction to it, it's based on my journal writing. And the earliest writing that's in the book is dated in 1995. But I could have gone further back. I was almost going to bring this big shopping bag of all my old journals that go, way far back. But they really had a point of start of when I was in a master's program in learning art therapy, so this was in the late 80s. So that's when I started writing in an official journal book, and then it just continued beyond that, and then I wrote for many years about my photography experience and my integrating it with Zen practice. And so I have a lot of journal books that have little pictures in it, like contact sheets, and larger journal books that I have of family and other things going on. And then it just progressed. The books progressed. It moved through the transition when I kind of moved out of Buddhist practice and more into Taoist practice, and kind of went through this very short phase where it was a natural healing phase. And so I wrote a little bit about that. That's when I got my training in acupressure and massage. And then it started with my early phases of Qigong, because Qigong kind of is always one step ahead of the official Taoist kind of practices. And then there was this lingering Buddhist thing following it. But then at some point, the Buddhist practice kind of dropped away, the Qigong accelerated, and then the Taoist element, became part of it. And so I obviously remember the transition, but my old journals kind of capture that transition as well. And so... So I think not quite 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I decided to turn all of my journal writings into an actual book. And so that's I didn't go back to capture all and to review everything until maybe in the fall I started doing that. But it was more of a conscious decision that the writing that I'm doing now will eventually go into a book, and there'll be and I had some false starts of for one time trying to do a fiction story, and I have, you know, still have the entries, but it got too fanciful, and I got into the, I realized, why am I wasting my time trying to write a make-believe story with these principles that I believe in, and just put them into this, you know, make-believe thing, and because, you know, I'm not like, I'm not driven by that, like the writer's drive to write and create. So I kind of gave that up and kind of went back just to recording my everyday experiences that I was going through. And so 2011, I guess, was there's a lot of entries in 2011. 2012 is sort of like probably the majority. I never counted how many entries or how many pages went into every year, but 2012 is probably the fullest year of my active writing. And then, well, then it ended on Chinese New Year, the Chinese New Year, the water snake. That was like the last day that I wrote, and that was the ending of it. I was looking for an ending date, and so that was like a good time to end it. And so I'll pause in between, or a little bit between a bunch, you know, the readings, but I want you to feel free to question or ask anything related, so that give me a break from talking so much or reading so much. And and then if questions arise on your mind, you might as well just ask them at that point. So I had to go back several times to figure out, since I haven't done this before, of doing an actual reading, of which sections or which journal entries to read. So you can give me feedback later to see if I've captured it all. So the first one is actually it's in the preface, and it kind of describes what I'm trying to do here. This journal will hopefully answer the important question, who is a Taoist, or what makes a person a Taoist? Both experienced Tao followers and those new to the Taoist path are frequently asking this question. My journal book is my response to this question. The more significant question for me, which is not as often asked, is how do you make progress as a Taoist? This is the key question I address throughout my journal. My answer comes from answering my own question from the very beginning of the book, and sort of my last one or two entries will keep on coming back to this what I'm going to read now. This is the key question I address throughout my journal. My answer comes from the words of advice given to me during my priest ordination training in 2003. It comes from the young Taoist priestess from White Cloud Temple, who temporarily served as my Taoist coach. And this is what she said. Very simple, one line. You progress as a Taoist in your heart. This book that I'm offering to you, the reader, serves as a doorway into practice. It is up to you whether it enriches your personal practice, your life. And this is the only artwork in the book. So this was a drawing, a brush painting I made, and I kind of had to go through my own process of like trying to figure out when did I do it, because it's like my wife has always known it, and I must have done it in the very beginnings of when I moved to California and we were getting together, and I put it in a very simple frame, and it's been up on the wall for a very long time, and it still is. The only time I took it apart recently was to when I needed to make a print from it. And my wife thought, well, that should be the name of your book. So it didn't quite become it was the second part of the title. So here I am again. This is chapter 1, 1995, September 12th. Because I was always starting journals. Sometimes I wouldn't do any journal writing for a year, and then I would start again. Something else would inspire me. So here it is, September 12th, 95, it's a short entry. Once again, I am starting a journal. This journal will be a record of my Taoist practices, including the Qigong exercises and the short form of Tai Chi I practice. He'll also cover the Taoist meditation practices I am learning. Any questions? Chapter 6. There's a big jump, and it was frustrating. You know, I had some 1995, and there's some other years, 96, 98, talking about learning a specific form of Qigong called Qi Lao Qigong during an experience of doing it while I was in Hawaii with my family. And then 1999, and then here we are in 2008, March 15th. So I was 2008, 2 years after I officially started the American Dragon Gate lineage, I was upping my practice, and I couldn't, you know, constantly be going on retreats. I can only, you know, do so much, full-time job. Raising a son and two daughters. So I had to make some extra time in the day. So this is how I made extra time to practice. March 15th, this is from an entry, from an all-night retreat. The following journal entries are from my all-night retreats I have started doing in my meditation room. Basically, I stay up all night and practice until 6 a.m., or another early time in the morning. I do a variety of practices, Qigong, Zoan meditation, Koan practice, drinking pu'er tea, reading inspirational books, reciting Taoist scriptures, and writing in my journal. I feel it is important to share this information, since many people ask me, what exactly do you practice? Or what do you do on a retreat? These entries are a doorway into practice. Okay.
How long was these all-night retreats something your teacher suggested, something you sort of cobbled together yourself, or
that's
quite a commitment, you know, like to stay up all night.
Oh yeah, and I wouldn't even start it until like I would not my normal bedtime, you know, like 11 or 12. I'd have a normal night, even though I knew I was going to do this, and then kind of like, well, instead of going to bed, you know, make up a strong pot of pu'er tea, you know, to get all my books out in the, you know, in my house. I have sort of like a separate part of the house where my meditation room is. Get everything prepared out there. If it was this one, that other one was in March. So it was kind of, you know, I've done them throughout the year. So some evenings I needed more clothes out there, clothing, or need to get the space heater going. So then I would go out 11 or 12, and I'd stay up to 6 or some. There were some times when I stayed up to 3. You know, I was really tired, or or 5 or 6. But it was nice getting up at 6, you know, at 6 o'clock. The clock hit 6. I kind of go out, you know, I have to, like, go out of the room and then go into the main part of the house. And then you know, go get a couple extra hours of sleep. And then wake up and everyone else is waking up, and except that I didn't sleep more than an hour or so.
How do you function the next day? I mean, are you...
I planned it. I didn't do it on a work day.
Yeah.
I did it on a weekend.
So it's a thing when you can really just...
Yeah. I mean, why... I'm not trying to make it difficult for myself. Trying to, you know, create the best possible scenario. So it usually all of these were probably done either on a Friday night. Well, not even to say, because I ever teach Qigong 10 o'clock on Saturday. So probably everyone, if you go back and look at the dates, it's Saturday night. So, you know, sleep in on Sunday. But I found out, you know, because of what I was doing for those 5 hours or 6 hours, I wasn't getting tired from it. And I had a lot of tea. But if this... These are energetic practices, you know, doing Qigong on and off, meditating, and if it works, the idea is that you're supposed to get energy from it. There were some early morning, like 4 o'clock kind of times when I would notice that, yeah, I did nod off a little bit, but then I woke up. And then I maybe did some Qigong, but that was okay too. That was part of the practice, you know. So, 2009, February 1st. It's Sunday morning, and I'm finally getting around to reading from Stephen Elkerson's book on the early Taoist masters of the Chuanzin School of Taoism. I'm especially drawn to his chapter on cultivating clarity and purity. In one of the poems by Wang Sha, the founder of Chuanzin, it says, resolutely yearn for the Tao and have nothing else that binds and enwraps you. I can't help thinking of some of my students who seem a little too complacent in thinking all they have to do is sit in meditation, make no big effort, and eventually they will attain the Tao. Instead, my response to the injunction to resolutely yearn for the Tao is a command to throw myself into practice 110%. Let go of self-imposed restrictions. It's okay to say to yourself, I will attain the Tao in this lifetime, whatever the cost to me. So it's sort of like when you do journal writing, the whole purpose is like a dialogue with yourself. You're constantly processing your life, and, you know, being, you know, I have all of these different components of my life, you know, family and work, and then I have Qigong students, I have local Qigong students, I have Qigong students that study with me from a distance, I have priest students that are kind of local, and then national and international. So I got all of this chatter going on in my head, and the journal writing is for the, you know, purpose of, you know, resolving and talking about all of that and coming to your own conclusions, and sometimes yelling at people through journal writing. Like, you know, what are you talking about? You think you're just going to, you know, do some quiet sitting meditation and you don't need to put any effort into it? You know, that's good, but, like, is that going to get you what maybe you really want, you know? Or you're just going to be a 50-year meditator who's still dealing with the same issues they did during their first 2-3 years of meditating. Okay, so then I have a whole bunch of entries that... Oh no, I have another all-night entry. Oh, this one is dedicated because I know this one is dedicated to many rivers and their tea, and especially their puer tea. So, kind of like leaving out the heart of it, but I'm just focusing on the teapot. So this is 2009, April 18th. It's from comes out in out of a all night retreat. It's 1 a.m. I just finished making a pot of puer tea, Gong Fu style. I'm letting it brew for a while, so I have nice strong tea to help me stay awake, alert for the next 5 hours. And then go on and talking. I think we made a fire in my yard that night. And so I have a pit fire that I go out and do Qigong later on. And then later, it's still during that time that I was writing. It's time for that puer. It's been waiting for me for about 30 minutes. Should be nice and strong. And then at 1:30, probably I'm drinking it by then. That was the best everyday puer I have had. I finished off 2 full Gawan cups like there was no tomorrow. I downed a few walnuts with it. What a Taoist feast. Puer tea and walnuts. I don't know if it gets any better than this. Naturally so. The Taoists are very simple. It's very easy. There's another retreat I did at the Sonoma Mountain Zen Center. And during one of my meals, I couldn't get into the guest house because they were doing other stuff. And so I came back to my room, and my lunch was sort of like a banana, a peanut butter jelly sandwich, and a cookie, and some puer tea. And I said, well, I guess I can't get any better than this. Okay, so 52. So now, Jim introduced me to Sky Farm Hermitage in Sonoma, up in the hills. It's only about 3-4 miles outside of Sonoma, but it's a Catholic hermitage. There's only 2, it's a sister and a brother that live there. And I went there a couple of years before this entry, and didn't have such a great retreat. I guess it was in the summer, and they have a lot of little huts made out of these giant wine vats, and so that's where I was. And every time I came in and out, I had to fight the wasp that got into the wood of the vat. So, you know, if I'm going to meditate, I want to meditate. I don't want to be worrying about the wasps coming in, you know, I can't quite meditate when I, and then I had to go out and cook in the refectory, and even though I was by myself, I had to just do all that stuff. I felt it too distracting. So then when I went back a second time, this is a few years later, in the meantime, someone built them a new, like, hermitage, a little cabin, so totally self-contained. So when you go there, or I went there, I was just there last week, not only is the whole place very quiet, very few people there, but there's the bathroom and the shower and a little cooking place and a nice patio, a deck overlooking the valley there. So I've been going there on and off since then. And let me see, this was in 2011. So I've got into a routine of almost going there 2 times a year, like a winter and then a summer. And then I think 1 year I went there 3 times. So this is July 9th, 2011. So this was an introduction to the retreat. An important practice of the American Dragon Gate lineage is to spend time in solitary retreat. Historically, the early Taoists of Chuanzen, or complete perfection Taoism, practiced meditation and other disciplines in small enclosures in solitude for long periods of time to foster self-cultivation, interior silence, and detachment from worldly ways. Modern day ADGL, that's the abbreviation for the lineage, adepts similarly go on solitary retreats or group retreats for the same purpose. 6 p.m. And here I am on solitary retreat again. I first came to this hermitage, which is 3 miles from downtown Sonoma, about 3 years ago. I arrived around 3 p.m., just in time for the afternoon heat. I am now cooking some rice with carrots and broccoli. Starting a retreat like this in the afternoon, you have to give yourself a chance to settle into the silence and solitude. Sky Farm Hermitage is very quiet and isolated. Though there are some residences nearby, and you can hear voices floating up the valley. Here, there are only the resident hermits, Sister Michaela and Brother Francis, and 2 other people on retreat. The other guests are leaving on Sunday. There is an abundance of birds and an overwhelming variety of bird songs. Brother Francis gave me the same warning he did when I was here before. If I go walking in the hills, watch out for the rattlesnakes. I'll make some pu'er tea to go with the monk's dinner. So that's 55. So this is still from the same retreat. Make sure I'm not skipping anything. So this is July 10th, 12:36 p.m. High noon. Once again, the sun is high in the sky and it's hot. I understand why this hermitage is called Sky Farm. Everywhere you look is the open, expansive view of the sky. It calls you to expand your internal vision, to become like the sky. You cultivate, in the parentheses, farm, close the mind, which is the inner sky. That's why it's called Sky Farm. A little earlier, I was circle walking in the courtyard next to the chapel. As I walked in the tranquility of the chapel, I recited, "Not to." "Not to," I asked as I walked. Changed directions, changed postures. No hat on bald head. Exposed to sun, not worrying, not fearing skin damage, just walking, just asking. And July 11th, same retreat, 8:45 a.m. While reciting the Dingguang Jing, a Taoist scripture on sitting and forgetting, this is a quote, "In inner observation, see a mind arise. If you become aware of the arising of a thought," immediately, but I can't even get off the next word because just as I was writing this, a bird crashed into the sliding glass door of my hermitage. I went outside, and sure enough, it was lying on the ground. It was alive, and after watching it for a few minutes, I got a towel and picked it up. I said some prayers for it and stroked its head and back. It kept blinking its eyes, open and shut. I expected it to stop blinking and breathing, but no. It popped out of my grasp and dropped to the ground. I thought maybe one of its legs was hurt, but it managed to hop under the porch. A few minutes later, it was still under the porch, and I thought, perhaps it knows to stay out of sight of any predator, like the circling hawks I was admiring yesterday. This is the circle of life and death, not two. And then this finishes that time of the. So 12 noon, the next day, a short walk, and this is written more as a poem in here. A short walk, realizing that a solitary retreat needs no expectations. There is nothing that needs to be done. Do only what you want to do, Make no preferences, no choices. You be like the trees, like the rocks, like the bird crashing into the glass door. You are fresh in every moment. You survive the crash, fly away. You don't survive the crash, you die, all in the moment. Any questions? Okay, then, sometimes there was a lot of personal things in my journals that I didn't really feel like fitted into this theme of why I was doing this. But every once in a while something happened personally that I just could not write about it and then not include it in here. So there was something that, well, you'll see that, you know, like a positive thing and a negative thing. You know, things always seem to balance each other, and those, you know, those are the lessons that we're always learning. So October 15th, 2011, I performed a Taoist blessing ceremony for Chloe's baby. Chloe is, I sometimes just say she's our unofficial adopted daughter. She started living with us. She's a close friend of my daughter when in middle school, who just had not good parents and was going from family to family, you know, trying to get through school, living with them for short periods of time. And so Ashley, our daughter, said, can Chloe just live with us, finish high school, you know? And so, well, you've heard me talk say that. So this is now Chloe as an adult and performing a blessing ceremony for Chloe's baby, Hedy. So I read several selections of Taoist scriptures, which have to do with purifications for the body, mouth, and spirit. Then I read a blessing for baby Eddie, which I would like to share with others. For a life of abundance, full of chi and universal harmony, we petition destiny to bring forth goodness and to dispel darkness for baby Eddie. May the rising incense of this petition ascend to the primordial origins. So that was obviously the good, right? So now comes the bad. So this was written during when back at the Sky Farm Hermitage. One AM, November 19th, 2011, 1 AM, reading from the rites of the American Dragon Gate lineage. I vowed to practice sitting in oblivion until I realized complete perfection. I vow to practice not to until I realize complete perfection. These are the words of inspiration for me tonight as the rain pours down heavy at times. 1:15 a.m. Oh no, this is from an all-night retreat. Sorry. I vow to practice dedicating the merits of my cultivation to all beings, both the living and the dead. I send blessings to my niece Jennifer, and for her baby, Chase Patrick, who did not make the transition to birth. May his spirit return to the vastness and mysteriousness of cosmic origins. Who knows the mystery of all of this? Now, I think I got my dates mixed up, because here I am saying, it's like a month later, and I'm saying, last Sunday, I performed a blessing ceremony for Chloe's baby, Eddie. I read a petition for Eddie's goodness, and now, not even a week later, I send blessings to Chase Patrick. Life is Life is indeed all about birth and death. There is no avoiding it. Lord Lao, teach me to fully embrace the mysteries of the universe, of the Tao, and to live in harmony with this endless flow of destiny. Let me not be swayed by superficial likes and dislikes, but dwell in the openness of non-dual being. Any questions? I'm more than halfway done with my reading. So. I'm going to have to break.
I don't know if this is a good time to
Well, yeah.
But, yeah, it kind of, I think, motivations for undertaking the practice such as Taoism or Buddhism are, we all enter in with different motivations, you know, whatever those may be personally. And I just wonder, you've practiced now for so many years, and how do you reflect on how this practice has perhaps altered you in your experience in interactions, relationships with others and with life?
Well, you have to read my book.
Yeah.
I have a very, there's a really long introduction
mm-hmm.
in it, and I kind of go through that process, and so, of explaining step by step what I did and what my, see, like, even though I said my journal writings didn't begin until like was in this school program in 88 or something, 86. But I reflect on many of the things that happened all the way back until I was in high school and different things. And, you know, I reflect on the book that got me started, or probably didn't get me started, but it made the difference, the razor's edge. I talk about it a lot in here. And even some of my high school surfing experiences.
Mm.
See, I've had to like reevaluate, like almost like rewrite my history, and what I thought about the things I did, because now seeing it from a distance, what I thought, what my evaluation assessment at the time was, it was like I was just learning how to surf and wanting to be in harmony with the surf and be a good, you know, surfer, and thinking I was going to surf for the, and this is in New York, this is not California. So I thought I was just going to surf the rest of my life. And but I think all of the things I've done, you know, made me who I am. If I deleted all of these important things that led up to what I've been doing now, then I would have been, who knows what I wouldn't, obviously, I had doubted if maybe only Jim and Mary would be here sitting, and because they faithfully are here every Thursday night, but I wouldn't be here if I didn't do all of this stuff. You know, I would be a totally different person. So it changes us totally. So that kind of, and
Yeah,
I mean, all of this stuff, it just changes you. You know, every experience changes you into, gets you set up for your next experience, for your next adventure. And, you know, like, even my, you know, when I was, like, in my Catholic monastic phase, you know, I thought I was going to be a Catholic monk or, you know, a hermit. You know, I wanted to be a hermit way far back, but then that kind of, as I went through different experiences, you know, I moved beyond that. But then I kind of like, it came back again. Things, you know, when they say life is a circle, it really is. Things keep on spiraling around, and they keep on coming back. They come back with a little twist, a little maybe maturity onto them. But the themes, just like, in when you have multiple marriages, multiple relationships, you're always dealing with the same issues. You know, the person changes, but you're still, you know, have the same issues. And it's, in the spiritual life, whether you're wanting to be a hermit as a Catholic or a Buddhist or a Taoist, there's still that wanting to be in that silence and solitude, whether it's for 2 days away, or it's a week away, or whether it's a longer period of being away. You know, when you got that drive, it keeps on coming back. Okay, back to, okay, I think we're getting close to when I put Lindsay on the spot back over there. Because she, you know, was, I think actually maybe the last time I came for a reading here was when Lindsay spoke from her book, A Valley Spirit. And so that a little thing about the book is there's about 35 other books that I used as references that went into this. And it took me from like October, November of 2012 up until like the very last minute of sending this to the, to get worked on by the publisher. So that's like March or February, to get all of these publisher permissions. And I didn't really think that, you know, was going to be such a big deal. You know, I got through everyone except the last two. One person, I think, disappeared from the planet. And then this other one from England. England always gave me a hard time. But it was the last, actually, it's the very last entry about this Taoist book that... It's an old book, and so I had to go back, and I told them, I was just, finally got a little sense of, like, not letting these publishers keep on pulling me through the ringer. And I finally said to them, well, your book was published in 1961, and that's according to the copyright law that I've been looking at, that qualifies as a public domain, so... You're not giving me a response, so I'm just going with my own, you know, making my own decision that I'm going to publish, you know, I'm going to copy from the book if you give me permission or not, because they were just taking forever to answer me. But I had to go through almost 6 months of getting permissions, and most of them were really nice. I met some kind of distant, you know, people over the internet and emails. Were very nice and very supportive, but they, I guess they're all very busy, you know, and like Shambhala took 4 months or 5 months to get back to me, and some Singing Dragon was one of my better experiences as a publisher when I was trying to get permission from Lindsay's book, and they told me, the first group, Line of Content,
Line of Intent,
they said, Singing Dragon's going to republish the book, and then so I went to Singing Dragon, and then they told me, we'll give you permission, but her book won't be published until, you know, in a few months, and so we'll give you the correct dates to go with it. So that, like, they were very nice dealing with that, and then later on I had to get permission two more books from Singing Dragon, So it was nice dealing with all of these publishers, and only a few of them. You know, the ones that have all the money are the ones that wanted more money. You know, University of California Press. You know, like, I had to pay $75 to get, you know, to copyright, you know, like 50 or 100 words, you know, like one long quotation. And I had to do that for around three or four. Wanted $50, $25. Two of them wanted me to send books to the author when it was published. But I'm glad they all didn't, because I couldn't have afforded, you know. Even if it was 25 times 30, that would have been too much for me to handle. So, let's see, where are we now? 113. Oh, okay, wait, I want to make sure I'm not skipping anything. Okay, so... Okay, August... So I'm at Sky Farm Hermitage around The beginning of the retreat started August 17th, 2012, and this is an entry. It starts on, this was like a full week at the Hermitage. Started, this is from August 20th at 9:30 a.m. in the morning. Last night I finished reading a book on a young woman's story of Taoist cultivation in modern China. I first met the author, Lindsay Wei, at a Taoist conference in Boulder, Colorado in 2006. Master Chen organized the conference. Master Chen arranged for about 30 of his fellow Taoists to come to Boulder from Wudong Mountain. There were several individual Kung Fu demonstrations, and one of them was by American Lindsay Wei, who was living and studying Kung Fu on the Wudong Mountain with different Taoist masters. Lindsay's performance was remarkable. Lindsay's Kung Fu matched up. She had already been to China three or four times already, but I've seen a lot of, you know, high quality Kung Fu going on over there. Lindsay's Kung Fu matched up to any that I'd seen in my several trips to China. After her performance, I just had to say hello to her and express my appreciation for her high-level Kung Fu skills. At the time, I thought I would never see her again. She's sitting back. But you never know what the future will bring. And in 2011, I discovered that Lindsay moved to my hometown, Sebastopol, California, and was teaching Kung Fu about 4 miles from where I live. And that is how I eventually came to be reading her book, her story, about training in Kung Fu on Wudong Mountain, meeting her master, and eventually becoming a 24th generation pure young sect disciple. Lindsay's book took me about 6 months to read, because I wanted to slowly digest what she had to say, and also because the print was so small it strained my eyes to read more than a few pages at a time. And I'm not kidding, I told her that already.
I know.
It was like, God, I need a magnifying glass on top of my glasses. And finally, last night I finished it. It was well worth the effort not to put it aside, as the last few pages were real gems. So here is one of those gems. So there's two, they're not real long, but they're all about her going through her process of resolving that it's finally time to leave China. I was soon to leave the mountain. Days before I was to walk down to my train, I began to feel as if I should not go. I knew what I was returning to, and I had done that before. I knew that this body and being of renunciation from the world would slowly leave me. It would fade into a new experience, and it would become clouded by the dust of society. And then, see, I'm also, in addition to writing about these two experiences that she was going through, I ended up comparing, and I'm not going to read about that, comparing what some other parts of her book with this other two, this other Simone Marnia, who wrote two really short little Taoist story books. And so I'm kind of like, I'm comparing, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but I'm really doing like a high school English comparison between two different authors, three different books. You know, like Lindsay's book is her teacher is responding to these a dialogue in this other book, and it was kind of interesting. And then on top of this, she's dealing with leaving. And so, let's see, And so, I completely understand, this is me talking about what's coming, and so I completely understand the pains of Lindsay, leaving the mountain and returning to her home in America. This is her words. 7 days later, I was driving on the highway through New Jersey to visit some old friends, and I turned on the radio, a song I remembered liking, and I began to cry uncontrollably, but with no holding on, and I felt my renunciation leave me. So that was it was really nice to like get into that book and the other book and see the conversations that her teacher was telling us. And here I'm gonna go back to read this because now Lindsay's here with her baby and her teacher is saying something like, if you truly want to know where do we come from and where do we go, then sit and be silent. But if there are still things you want, children, husband, family, love, happiness, even life itself, then don't do it. So I know those were really hard words for Lindsay to hear from her teacher. Okay, getting down to my last couple of sections to read. So now we come, now we're sort of, we're getting back, we're in November of 2012, November 11th. Now going back to the beginning, what does it mean to be a Taoist? I have asked this question repeatedly throughout this journal. The question of Taoist identity may turn out to be the most important topic discussed in the journal. It may be as important as the question of what does a modern-day Taoist practice? And now, this morning, as I recite the invocation for offering incense, I read the following words as if for the first time. To follow the Tao, use your heart. To connect with the spirits, you must circulate incense. Burn incense in the jade stove. Maintain the original emperor in your heart. Ascended spirits gaze down while the flag of the immortals arrives before the altar. Minister Guan speaks the command for the way to attain nine heavens. Ah, there it is again. You are a Taoist if you feel it in your heart. Those are the same words of advice given to me during my priest ordination. And furthermore, we grow as Taoists according to how we fill our hearts with the Tao. The symbolism of offering incense points to our Taoist cultivation practices, such as Qigong, Tai Chi, circle walking, meditation, silence and solitude, reciting scriptures, eating healthy, and other Taoist practices. And if we are continually growing deep in our hearts, then we will attain our goal of residence in the celestial heavens, that is, alignment with the Tao. What does it, November 13th. What does a Taoist practice at night? See, this is like real simple answers, comments, but this is, I feel like, getting to the real heart of what a Taoist does and how they make progress. What does a Taoist practice at night? You go outside on a clear night and do some of your favorite Qigong, Tai Chi, or Kung Fu. You gaze at the dark sky and reach to the stars. Silently, your spirit yearns to merge with the stars and return to the source. You are ready to leave the world and soar as an immortal. You are at peace, even if just for a short time. You are home. No, not at home, because you know your true home is among the stars and the celestial heavens. This is your practice as a Taoist. Now I'm into 2013. Any questions before the last entry? Okay, January 20th. It's just, let's say, my very last entry is, well, I'll read that when we get to it. January 20th, 2013. I am at the end of my journal project. So when I meditate these days, I don't have to think about what I will write about for the journal. I can just sit in oblivion, allow the mind to settle down, watch the arising thoughts come and go out of nothingness and return to nothingness. Occasionally I ask, what is not to? And I don't need to worry about any grand insights to write about. Just openness with no need to attain the Tao, for it, the Tao, takes care of itself. So then my last entry, February 10th, first day of the year of the water snake. I end all my Qigong classes with the following closing. It will be my simple way of finishing this journal and offering my final gift to all my students and brothers and sisters of the way. Lift your hands up to the sky and connect with the starlight energy. Feel your chi extend from your fingertips and reach up to connect with the starlight energy coming down. As you bring your hands down, feel the energy sink to your feet. Reach up again, gather more starlight energy, and bring it down to your legs. Last time, reach up and bring the starlight energy down and fill the rest of your body. Cover your lower dantian with your hands. Gather the medicine saliva in your mouth. While doing this, visualize your lower dantian. See your kidney fire on the ground with a giant cauldron suspended above the fire and liquid medicine cooking in it, refining its essences, Qing, Qi, and Shen. Consciously swallow the medicine saliva and drop it into the cauldron, mixing it with the other simmering medicine. See the refined essence of the Qing, Qi, and Shen rising as a steam up into the chest. The Lung Qi collects this essence and circulates it throughout the body for healing, rejuvenation, and deep storage. Finish. Oh. That's the book.
It is so nice to have those words
I know.
In the book, and when I'm not in class or not with you, here are the words that I know by heart.
Yeah. I mean, I don't read. I mean, it's pretty much the 80% of how I finished it, but I kind of, you know, took writer's liberty to elaborate a little bit on it. But that's how each class ends. And so that was my ending of the book. I didn't, you know, like, how do I end this journal book, you know? So it was, when I got that idea, it was a perfect ending. So, any questions?
Do you ever reflect on the influence you have on other people by your Qigong and Taoist practices?
Do I reflect on that, or do is that?
Are you aware?
Oh, am I aware of it? Yeah.
Good.
No, I mean yes. I've had a number of people I've been prompting to, you know, write reviews, because, you know, like, when after, so I'll tell Jim this, after I wrote that last entry, the book didn't stop. Like, if I was writing it for myself, it would have stopped, but if I really wanted to share it, the next phase of writing a book happens. Then you got to start the marketing of it. And part of the marketing is playing different, you know, the different games. It's sort of like, you got to get up there in the Amazon, because it's, well, maybe it's the technical things about this book is, self-published through through Amazon, but it's they have a special division or whatever called Create Space, and there's a whole bunch of other similar ways to self-publish a book, because once you start putting the word out on the internet, they all want to get your business, right? So Create Space was just one of them. But if you want to distribute through, and that's also known as print on demand. So as a when you're self-publishing, you don't have to, tell your the publisher, okay, print me up 1,000, or I can only afford 500, or I want 10,000, and then that's when you have to put out a lot of money. But print on demand, you don't have to put up anything. So you just create an account with CreateSpace. And then they distribute it. But it's sort of like, well, if you want your book to be found, I went through a very fast phase, a very big learning curve with them to see that just because it was with Amazon and in their, their system, didn't mean anyone was going to find it. So I've been learning, what do I have to do so people find it? If you do a search for Taoism, a Taoist practice, and the book may or may not show up. So that's why I try to encourage people to write Amazon reviews, because in addition to the sales of the book through them, they like to see what other people are saying about you. And so right now I have 9 reviews on there. And they're all from my students, except one is from an Italian Taoist in Italy who found me, and now we're friends, and he wrote a review. But then I looked at some other popular books, and they got 50 reviews. And so they're more, so it's like showing, you got to show Amazon that not only is your book, making sales, people are giving feedback about it, because you want them like Livia Cohn's book, Sitting in Oblivion. That she's very well known, and her book is very well known now. So if someone wants to go buy that book for the first time, they'll go right to Sitting in Oblivion, and then what does Amazon do? The next day you get an email from Amazon saying, you bought this book, and now maybe you want this book. Mm-hmm. So they'll never recommend my book until there's been a number of reviews and sales about it. So that's, that's the game, You gotta get reviews out there, get as many sales as possible, and then you'll get them to recommend it, because now it's clearly in a genre of Taoist. If you just put in Taoist practices, it's probably the first book that pops up, because Tao, it's like the key word. Taoist practices, it's the first two words of the book. So, but and then right under that is Livia Cohn's book. And then the neat thing about it is one of the endorsements is by Livia Cohn. It's the marketing thing. You got to write the book, but then despite your good intentions, you have to get into the marketing phase. Otherwise, just your immediate friends and family will never know about your book. So if you want to really share it, you got to get the word out.
Your little drawing, and then the part of the title, Come Laugh With Me.
Yeah.
This is all real new to me. So where does that come from? Come Laugh With Me. Is that part of?
That comes from me.
I mean, I didn't pick that up in any of the readings.
There's one entry talking about me forgetting exactly when I did that drawing or painting, but it's sort of Come Laugh With Me is sort of like reflecting on. It's a humorous path, there's comedy and there's fun in it, and that's sort of like what I bring to the practice. And that's why I must have made that painting, you know, 20 some years ago. And but there's not a lot in, there's not much in the book written about that, except that I think I do say my wife suggested that I use that in the book. You know, she wanted me to put that on the cover, and I didn't quite want to put that on the cover, but it got sort of the subtitle of the title.
So with the self-publishing and print-on-demand, how do you get a handful of books in each of the Copperfields or Books Inc. and things? Because if they're print-on-demand, they're not sitting on the store shelves. Is there a way to do some of that?
Well, there, part of the answer to that is, like, the I brought in a bunch here. So I, as the author of the book, I can buy these books at a really low price. I mean, the book's not expensive to begin with, but I can buy it at a really low price, and then I could then, you know, resell them to people locally. And then as the as like a book seller, there's another way. You, like Jim, you ordered them in a different route, right?
One of the things that CreateSpace offers an author is that channels of distribution. And one of the channels of distribution is called Ingram, which is the largest distributor in the United States. And they list the book with Ingram. And what that means is that any local bookstore could order Michael's book because it's listed in the national database of America's largest distributor. Now, they might not have it on their shelves,
right,
but somebody, Michael could say to someone who contacted him by email, say from Atlanta, Michael could say to them, this is my book, you can order it through your local bookstore, or you can get it at Amazon.
Yeah, and like, you're probably not going to find it in Copperfields. They just, they're resisting it a little bit. You know, what I've been piecing together is, they don't like buying self-published books this route, because when they, you, I think you were saying that they don't, when you get it through like CreateSpace or Amazon, well, no, through CreateSpace directly, they don't take refunds. And
you can't return the book.
Yeah, so it may not show up at Copperfield, but it'll show up here. And then, you know, everyone, you know, the whole story, everyone is buying everything online. And you can actually buy it online through Amazon, you know, because they are able to keep on changing those, you know, the cost of it. So it's cheaper through Amazon than... CreateSpace has its own way of selling it, which they don't deviate from the book list. Amazon lowers it, and then I sell it for a different price. You know, it's all still around $12, but I think Amazon, you could get it for a couple of dollars less. But then you have to maybe pay for the shipping unless you buy $25 worth.
So it's better to buy it at Many Rivers.
It's better to buy it at Many Rivers or buy it directly from me.
You're here, might as well
do it. Yeah. Any other questions? Or?
I had a question. Are you still in touch with your teacher or the people who ordained you at the White Cloud Temple? And do you feel like that has been a major influence in your experience of Taoism? Or do you feel like there's been a different influence, like, other life situations or your own retreats? Or?
Well, it's a little of both. I mean, it's more through Master Wan, who was here, actually here, and gave a talk here in 2006. He's one of the people I acknowledged, because even though I don't have a real... I don't want to use the word strong, because I do. I feel like I have a strong connection with him. I wouldn't have been ordained if I didn't have a strong connection. I feel like we got a spiritual energy connection there going on. you know, I wish he came to this country more often, I think, because of financial reasons, people like him that can only travel when he has a lot of, you know, supporters with money, kind of are limited. He goes to the Japan a lot, some of the European countries. And I've gotten a little discouraged from going to China, you know, continuing to go to China every number of years. But he's always sending me updates of what they're doing. I sent him a copy of the book. I started, I'm already working on another book, and so now I'm beginning a process with him of questioning him about his circle, his Bagua circle walking. So this will begin another round of communications with him. But I do feel like a lot of my inspirations are coming from these kind of retreats and this continued studies that I do and the contacts that I make and my own development and my students. You know, my pre-students when they come to me, they may go through the very beginning stages, but they already have 30 years of experience. Or one of my pre-students is already a Taoist monk in another lineage, and he wants to go through the lineage training with me. So I'm learning from them as well, and then learning how to be, you know, the head of a group of very dedicated, sincere students and practitioners. I mean, that's, you know, they say the best way to learn something is to teach. Well, goes along with that. So the best way to learn about the spiritual life is be a spiritual teacher and a leader, or the head of something. So it kind of it outweighs at this point my China experiences, because, you know, it's present. It's right here, right now.
Is White Cloud Temple, is that Master Duan, or is that Master?
No, it's neither one of them.
Oh, it's not Master Duan either.
No. Remember, Master Duan is not a priest. He's got his own thing centered there. The White Cloud Temple is the head of the Longmen Taoists in China. It's like the head center. And it's, you know, it's where we went when I. That was the White Cloud Temple there. Remember that in Beijing, that big temple there?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Renee was been on one of my, the last China trip.
2008.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the White Cloud Temple.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is Taoism the same, when you say the Tao, it's the same as the T-A-O spelling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Why is there a difference in spelling? Is it just?
Well, because the DAO is opinion. It's the opinion pronunciation and how to write it.
Yeah,
so that's the modern day way in China how things are translated and spelled out. The TAO is the older school, or the older method of translation, the Wade Guile, something like that. So I think we're at the end and the gym of the closing.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.